Hi there, and welcome to this Wednesday night live session. It's a recording of a redo because I forgot to hit record last night. So let's get stuck straight into it. The topic today is team conflict. I first of all want to just go through a few items as usual. So here's our live session for today. And the first thing, I'm just going to untick these things from the agenda, which I did last night. The first thing I wanted to mention was that all the members now should be part of the Club Hub. Now, the Club Hub is the website page that's devoted to the club members. And just to give you a little bit of information about what's contained on that page, it really is designed at this stage, it may change in the future, but it really is designed, I won't even be able to gain access now. That's okay. It's really designed for people who aren't eager to become part of the Trello board. The Trello board is a wonderful space to be in because we've got the natural links to other cards and information where you just click on it and go. With the Club Hub, it's got a list of all of the recordings that we've done, an attachment sheet of the links that we provide, but the Trello board is where you can make notations, give some feedback, ask some questions, highlight where your areas of interest are as well. And it does help you in knowing how to use a Trello board because, as you know, I'm a great supporter of them for you to use in your own practices and your own lives as well. So unless I let you know about it, there's nothing on the Club Hub page that you don't already have better access to on the Trello board. So if you haven't got yourselves all organized on the Club Hub, if you haven't received any emails, always look in your spam folder for emails from me and let me know if you've got any questions. The next thing I wanted to mention was this Howard Foran podcast. So I love listening to podcasts. Whenever I'm in the car, I am listening to a podcast or an audiobook. And the Howard Foran one is Dentistry Uncensored. And Howard Foran's been a dentist over in Arizona in the US for decades. He's very successful. He has also been enormously successful in developing Dental Town from a magazine that was issued out to dentists in America to this enormous online presence that supports dentists all over the world. His podcast ranges in topics from practice management all the way through to clinical elements. And I've got the link of his latest podcast here down below. And his topic of conversation, it was actually somebody else that put together a panel of members, one of whom is Howard Foran, somebody from India, the UK, and from Australia as well, all dentists, talking about what their government and health authority response to COVID-19 has been. What it told me was that Australia seems like we are by far over and above in effective management and effective support of the dental community than any other country. Countries like India are facing a whole completely different challenge in that the guy said, I'm not so much worried about getting back to work, I'm worried about all the millions that are dying from starvation because of the government response to the COVID-19 situation. So different countries have wildly different issues. Americans are still quite panicked about everything. But I was very encouraged when it was a comparison between the countries. And I was also very encouraged with Howard Foran's positive, powerful mindset around this, delivering a whole bunch of great ways of looking at things and facts and figures. And I suggest that you have a listen to it. It's a lengthy one. I think it's going to end up going for a couple of hours. I've got about 10 minutes left to listen to it, but I think that's worth your while. Click on it next time you're driving to work or going for a walk. The other thing is the online courses. I spoke to a member very recently and she had not heard effectively. I do tend to say things once where I should be repeating more often, I think, about your access to the online courses. The online courses is, you find it on the julieparkerpracticesuccess.com website, no.au at the end, just.com. The list of courses, number 17 of them, and they have been webinars that I've been rolling out for years. And they're on key topics that affect the business management of your practice. Topics such as superstar receptionist, that goes through rapport building skills, telephone skills for your receptionists, building a successful recall strategy, successful hiring and onboarding of new staff, reactivating your inactive patients, how to reduce broken appointments, delivering great customer service, scheduling for low stress and high productivity, building a successful team, converting new callers into appointments, tracking key performance indicators, dental reception fundamentals. That one's really designed for if you have a dental receptionist employed at your practice that doesn't have any dental background, hasn't come from dental nursing into that dental reception role. And so that helps them out. Achieving patient engagement, managing your incomplete treatment list, how to build excellent practitioner-assistant relationships in your surgery, transform your team through a powerful team culture, identifying and achieving dental practice goals, and how to lead and manage your team. Each of these courses goes for about an hour. Some reach out to an hour and a half. This one here, What You Must Know About Your Patients, was always a freebie. Let me just quickly show you the structure of these online courses. Once you click into them, you then get a progress.
This Julie Parker Practice Success Online course. Just a very brief history about me. I have been in the dental industry for a long time, since I was 17 years old.
Then talks about what we're covering today. We watched the recording of the webinar that I'd presented live.
Hi there and welcome, Julie.
That goes through.
So they are the three.
And then there's the presentation slides and any other downloads, templates, scripts that I suggest throughout. There's some other bits and pieces that I suggest within that one mini course. And then your market is complete, or you can continue on watching it if you're halfway through. So once you have, if you, from the very start, I asked for a email address that you wanted your team to be able to use. So your email address that you use within Trello and within the club, that could be yours just personally because you're the one participating. However, this online courses student profile, you may wish that to be a practice-wide thing. So using the practice email instead, so all of your team members can gain access quite easily. It's up to you. If you haven't yet gained access, you've got all of these for absolutely nothing while you're involved in the club. So you've got complete access to all of them. So if you would like to activate your student profile, all you need to do is let me know which email address you would like to use. And that's just by emailing me at julie@julieparkpracticesuccess.com.au. Okay. We'll tick that one off. Remind about the online courses. The next thing is the daily focus. Now, I hope you have found it useful to have one small element to concentrate on every day of a week, and that can help to shift mindset, shift thoughts, shift the meaning we attach to certain events that happen throughout our working day, so it becomes a more enjoyable day for all of us. The reminder that you get every morning goes through Monday through to Friday, and every Wednesday we refresh what the daily focus is. And this one is, what can you surrender attachment to and improve that team member's performance, that team member's performance in your eyes? So let me tell you just a little story about why, what I'm talking about here. I'll just take it off the share and I'll double check that we are recording. We are recording, that's golden. There was a situation with a team member that I've been working with for a number of years, and the management of incomplete treatment follow-up, there's an area within the dental software where naturally that gets housed, that information. Like I sent the letter, or I had a phone call, the patient called and gave us an update. And the receptionist was putting that information in a different area, in the treatment planning area. So what it meant was that if that patient came in and had an adjustment to their treatment plan, so needed the plan printed out again, or wanted a fresh plan printed out, that all of these notes would appear these item numbers that go, note, appear on that plan. They can't see the description behind the note, like I called this patient today, but they just had, it has a whole series of the word note there. And I thought that's not great to have that appear on the treatment plan if it doesn't need to, because that's just going to confuse the patient and make it look like we've got all these things that they're not privy to, this information that they're not privy to reading. And so I'd suggested on, I had a discussion with her on maybe two or three occasions saying, I can see that you're putting information there. This is where it's naturally to be housed. Does that make sense? And, you know, I do my very best always to try not to be a micromanager. So I'm always trying to assess, you know, is it something that I just want done my way because it's more comfortable for me, or is it actually affecting a system? And I thought, oh, well, it's a, you know, it is something that it lengthens the system out to print each treatment plan, because I delete the notes, I copy and delete them, then I put the notes back in again after I've done the print. So I suppose it does affect the efficiency of that process. So I thought it was worthwhile attaching my attention to. And even though at the time of that, my discussions with, I'll just call her Sally, with Sally, she'd nod and go, yeah, I understand, great, fantastic. But then she'd never change the way she was doing things. And I found myself getting into that old mindset of every time I'm seeing it, then it would frustrate me a little bit. It would tweak something within me. And then thinking to myself, okay, it hasn't been a simple, straightforward thing to have this person change the way they do this task. They haven't come from a dental background. And so whereas it may make beautiful sense in my brain to do it my way, then she may think, but it makes beautiful sense in my brain to do it my way. And I thought, well, she's the one that has to roll out the system majority of the time, 95% of the time it's her job. She has, with her knowledge of the dental system and how she, her knowledge of how she works, she's determined this is the way it's going to be. So I thought, okay, I'm going to let it go. It's not ideal in my book. Not everything's going to be ideal ever. So I'm going to let this go. I am going to surrender to Sally and say, you've got it. I surrender. So I had a chat with Sally and I told her that I was surrendering, which you can imagine she was enormously relieved from, because now I can stop badgering her about it. And what I found when I surrendered it, what I found was that during the process of being very aware of this one niggly thing, this one negative in my brain, I started to pick up on other little things that I thought she wasn't doing 100% well either. And I started focusing on those things a little bit more as well. And then I'd find more, and then I'd find more. When I surrendered the main issue, all of the little niggles of everything else, I didn't see them anymore. It was literally like I put rose-colored glasses on and I only saw the good that that person was doing, the stuff that she was doing beautifully well, the stuff that came naturally to her, the stuff that she was a great performer in. That's all I started to see again. And it was a lesson for me that if we do try to scrutinize, try to shift, try to change, if we become frustrated and stay in that frustration space with a team member regarding an issue, it's going to just that, the space that we're holding means that we are now going to be scrutinizing many things they do without being really consciously aware of it. And then that's when you start going, oh, no, this person's not working out, and we might have to change them if they can't get trained, and everything becomes very dramatic. Whereas if you just let some of the stuff go, then that opens your eyes up again to all the wonderful things that they do. And I don't concentrate on any of the negatives because I don't see them now. So it was quite an interesting thing for me to experience and for me to identify. And so that's the daily focus for this week. Is I encourage you to have a think about, is there something that I am particularly rigid about, that I'm unhappy about, and what impact would it actually have if I just let that go? If I just let that go, because what I want to do is see the great stuff that everybody does around me. I don't want to be in a scrutinizing headspace. And so what can you surrender attachment to? And therefore improve that team member's performance in your eyes. And a question mark, not a full stop. So you would have got that email, reminder email this morning. And now you understand what that means. Now, I haven't written a blog for a couple of weeks. I've been busy just doing the back end, planning of the club and the website page and everything. So I did write a blog on this a number of months ago. I'm going to repost that blog out too. It relays the story I've just spoken about as well. Okay, 20 minutes in. That's normally how long it takes me to get through a few of the housekeeping bits and pieces. Now for our main topic of today, which is team conflict. I've got a card there, so I'm going to click on that. Now, team conflict came from, as a topic, came from when Charles Covess did his live presentation at one of the live sessions last week. And one of our members did, Charles was talking about just how to develop a great team. And the topic of team conflict came out. So we were able to address it in a short period of time, but it was certainly card worthy, hence this live session about it. Reflecting what team conflict is all about made me think, well, it ends up being team conflict. You can have team member unhappiness. They could be unhappy in something within their own life or headspace, or they could be unhappy because somebody else has done something or not done something, another member of staff. Team conflict happens when one member has a negative behaviour or attitude, or has a behaviour or attitude, doesn't even have to be negative, and another one responds to that in a slightly negative way, and then this one responds to that behaviour, that response in a slightly negative way, and then we've got a race to the bottom of who can be more upset with each other sometimes. And I've got a couple of example stories, or one main example story, that really highlights that at the extreme end of the scale, when people are terribly unhappy with each other, when it's at to the point where one or both of them would have to quit to actually get free of it all, my management of that particular situation when it happened in my practice many years ago, between two lovely girls, gave me a number of lessons that I have then incorporated into my team management style. So let me set the scene for you. I had two surgeries running, and the nurses in both of those surgeries both just happened to be named Joe. They were both hilarious, delightful, kind, friendly people, beautiful. They were rubbing each other up the wrong way. I could see it happening, but only slightly. It seemed like a slight annoyance. It didn't seem like anything bigger than that. And then one morning, I'm arriving at work at 7:30 in the morning, and I get a phone call, and I was just about to pull into the driveway, and it's one of the Joes. And Joe said to me, "Joe has just physically assaulted me in the surgery." And I was like, "Oh my God, I've never dealt with this before." And I thought, what do I do with this? And so I said, okay. And I don't know where my management of this came from. Maybe it was my wise dad, who had since passed, was coming down and giving me some sort of sense, because I would not normally have been thinking so well on my feet. But the level of the phone call made me think that it was quite serious. I knew in that moment that if there'd been a physical assault in the surgery, the last thing the girls needed, or our patients and the rest of the team needed, was to have those girls there for that day. Things had become so extreme, they needed a chance to calm down, and we needed to, as always, create a positive, caring, professional environment for our team and patients. And it was always going to be unfair to send one home and make the other one work through their trauma. So I knew I had to send them both home. So I said to the Joe that I was on the phone to me, I said, okay, it sounds pretty extreme. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you both the day off, but I need to speak to you both before you go. If you now go get your bag, just leave your surgery the way it is. I'm going to get a couple of temp nurses in. Go get your bag and all your belongings. Come out and meet me in the car and we'll have a chat. Rang the temp agency. We had always used temps quite a bit. The minute someone was sick, I'd ring the temp agency straight away. We had a great relationship with them. We gave their temps a beautiful day. We paid the bills right on the dot. We were polite and friendly to all the temp agencies. So I always wanted to be the cream that rose to the top with the temp agency. So if we were desperate, we were the top ones they wanted to please. So we did have, I knew I'd have the ability to get two temps in straight away, which is what was organised. The first Joe came out to the car and had a chat to me. And then I went into the practice with the second Joe and I said, let's have a chat. And then you go home for the day. What I did in that chat was just get them to tell me their stuff. I knew that I would not get the truth from either of them. I would get their truth from them. But as you know, there's person A's version, person B's version, and then what actually happened. And as a person coming into the environment, I was never going to get what actually happened. So it was not going to be my position to make a judgment call of who was right and who was wrong. I also knew because of that situation, I was not going to take sides. Years ago, my mum had given me a book called Putting It All Together. I'm sure it was called Putting It All Together by Dr. Irene Casula. It was a book more so about marriage and married couples and things, but the lessons within it, mum felt when I was 14, I needed to read about and learn. And I did, because I think I was acting quite like a selfish little brat at 14. And what this book showed me was that I am responsible for the space that I hold within my family and my friendship groups. And I'm responsible for my own life and what effective communication is and all that sort of stuff. It was the first self-help book in essence that I'd ever read. And I loved it. One of the things that she said in this book was, you've got to get it out of your mouth. It was talking about, you know, the traditionalist book would have been written, I don't know, in the 70s or 60s. So it was talking about women generally in marriage, they are kind of told to be quiet rather than express their thoughts, and how that in itself can be a damaging thing, and how freeing it is and how powerful it is to get it out of your mouth. And so throughout the book, it does say, just get it out of your mouth, get it out of your mouth. So that came through to me with these discussions with the Joes. So I said, just tell me what happened. And then each one told me. And I said, okay, I just want you to go home, try to relax, try to have a nice day, treat yourself, go for a walk on the beach, get your nails done, do something that's just nice. Sit on the couch and watch a movie for the day. Just do something that's nice and restful for you, because I didn't want them to start feeling worse in any way. That was the highest level of upset that I wanted team members to exhibit at the practice that I owned. So I wanted to do everything possible to help that person go, okay, let's just take stock. Let's just relax. And so when they came back in the next day, they were more likely to be receptive to doing things in a different way than they did that morning. Now, I said to each one of them, tomorrow when you come back into work, as you know, the way things happened today was not part of our team culture. When you come into work, you both must, and there's no question about this, you must work to team culture. It doesn't mean that you need to feel it in your heart. I don't care if you fake it the whole day. I get it. You're upset with that person. I understand and I respect that. But tomorrow, what's going to happen is this. You are going to come in tomorrow morning. You're going to see that person. You're going to look them in the eye and smile and say, good morning. And then if you pass each other in the hallway throughout the day, you want to look each other in the eye and smile. One point during the morning and one point during the afternoon, you must do the other person's sterilization for them. And when that person comes to you and says, may I do your steri for you, smile and say, that'd be great, thank you. And then when you leave for the day, look that person in the eye. If they're not around you, seek them out. Look them in the eye and say, thank you for today. And that's all I'm asking of you. As I say, I get that you're upset. I honor the fact that you're upset. But in order for you to turn up to work tomorrow, this must happen. And I was very firm. At no point did they both speak together. There's no point in getting people to speak together when they are that upset with each other in the heat of the moment when there's another option. So both of them got exactly the same information from me. Both of them knew I wasn't taking sides as well. They got their out of their mouth. I heard it. I didn't interrupt. I get it. Mm-hmm. You can hear all this stuff without saying, oh, really? And then what did she do? Oh, she sounds like she did the wrong thing. Or you sound like you did the wrong thing. So then we had the day with the temps. Of course, it was a lot calmer than it could have been. The next morning, they both turn up to work and they started to roll out the behaviour that I had enforced, really. I didn't give them another option. And so when I saw them look at each other in the eye and say good morning, I saw each one of them out separately and I said, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to see. Thank you. Thank you for the effort. And every time I saw them do a positive interaction, I would go to them and thank them. I didn't see them do a negative interaction with each other. And I also checked in with them both through the day, through the morning. It was only through the morning I had to. And say, is everything going okay? I can see you're making good effort. Are you still feeling okay? Yeah. Good. Great. By lunchtime, they both came to me to my office. And I was like, I hope everything's gone okay. Did anybody punch each other? And they said, you know what? We're okay. It's all good. No, we're good again now. And I was like, what? Wow, like that's amazing. And they did. They ended up working happily together. And this scenario really did highlight many useful lessons for me to then take forward. One, do get people to get stuff out of their mouth. If they're emotionally affected by their frustration or resentment or anger or distress, get them to say it out loud. There's power just in that, just to have somebody acknowledge and understand them. There is power in that. That took fire out of it. The other thing was fake it. If just faking it, forcing you to interact with that person, and it ends up softening quite possibly your attitude with that person. So very quickly it goes from being fakey to authentic. And if you remember back to school, you had a cliquey group in primary school, for example, and then that kid over there was the one that everyone always just spoke about. And then the next year, or you know, maybe it was somebody you literally disliked. I remember a girl that I thought I really disliked. And then the next year she's in my class, we sit beside each other and she's great. And then she became my best friend. And so we think we don't like somebody because of all the whatevers, but change the framework around it, change your attitude towards that person, change the glasses that you see them with, like the surrendering, the rose colored glasses. And then all you can see is the good stuff with that person. And you can't see the bad stuff, all the bad stuff you see, and it's not bad anymore, it's just stuff. And so as adults, we're no different. We have got the ability to change our attitude towards someone. We can go from not liking someone to liking someone. It is rare that we come across characters that are so revolting in their nature that they are repulsive. If they've committed crimes and if they're mean-spirited and all that sort of stuff. But generally, if you can force yourself to like somebody, and it's not a long journey after that to authentically liking them. So I think that was a key thing in that lesson with the Joe and Joes as well. And the other thing that it taught me was the importance of a stated and agreed upon team culture, because that's what I fell back on. And when you are dealing with a group of people, of course there's going to be conflict. Family units who love each other have conflict. So why would we think a group of strangers coming in together under a dental roof would be any different? Of course, there's going to be conflict. So what we do need to do is say, this is the way we behave here. Pardon me. I'm not about to cry. This is the way we behave here when things are great. And this is the way we behave and manage issues should they rise up. And if things go all the way to conflict, this is what we do. This is how we are cross here with each other. This is how we unhappy with each other's behavior here. And you have all of these things as part of your team culture. Now I've attached to this card a guide, which I've mentioned in the past. You may have already seen it. Share screen. Or maybe I attach it to this one here, but I will attach it to, yeah, Team Culture Guide. Here we are. So the Team Culture Guide is a questionnaire that you and your team move through, and by the end of it, you have determined what your team culture is. And because everyone's had their input into it, they all have a sense of pride and responsibility over it as well. And because they've had their input into it, they agree with the contents of it, which is key. What behaviours are rewarded? What behaviours are punished? And this is the questions of where are we now? What's going on now? And then we move through questions of where are we going? So what do we actually want in the future? Let's describe our best team culture. We know now what's going on now. And so we've in that process, we've identified the bits we want to keep, the bits we want to do more of, and the bits we want to do less of. And the other crucial element of it, which is part of it's here, is once you determine where you're going, what you're identifying as well is what role will each member of the team play in achieving this team culture. So do move through that culture guide if you don't have an established culture, because the ability as a manager of people to be able to say the way you're behaving, as you would likely know, is not in line with our team culture. Remember, this is our team culture. So with that in mind, what do you think a better response is going to be? What do you think a better behaviour at the moment is going to be? And get them involved in their own feedback for turning up to work the next day. So I hope you can see the relevance of that. Now, I'm just going to share my screen again. There was it's not the prettiest, here we are. This is not the prettiest little guide that I've ever done in my life, but I will pretty it up as well. But I just threw this together earlier, and so it's very raw in its appearance. So as always is the case, prevention is far better than cure, and team conflict is absolutely that. There's a lot of damage that can happen when you allow team conflict to remain unmanaged in your practice. So let's just go through this little list here. If it's unmanaged, things lead to resentment. Ill feeling and unhappiness will then move into resentment. And I was listening to an interview with a marriage psychologist or marriage counsellor years ago, maybe a couple of years ago. And they said something that I thought, gosh, that's so interesting. He said, if I get people, a married couple, when they're angry with each other, I can work with it. If they are in resentment, I hold little chances of that marriage surviving. And I thought, wow, that's accurate, I think, because I've been in a first marriage and I've been in anger that leads to resentment, and I was resentful and he was resentful. And it's true, when you're angry, you're impassioned, you still care. But once you've gone to resentment, it's like you've given up hope of that person, and now you're tainting them with the same brush every single time you see them. You can't live with resentment without attaching it to that person that's caused it, in your brain caused it, again and again and again. It's always there. It's a hook that's in that person that all the time, a negative hook that's in that person all the time. Anger is very much in the moment. It's more short-lived. You can't remain angry forever, but you can hold resentment until your dying day. So if unmanaged team conflict can lead to resentment, once it gets to resentment, it's hard to budge, because keep in mind too, with a married couple, they've got a loving, intimate bond to fall back on to carry them through the bad times. But in a working team, you don't have that loving bond to carry you through. So resentment's even more likely to be something that you cannot dissolve quickly, if at all. The next thing is, which of course this is what I experienced with the Joes, is that things tend to escalate. Rarely does team conflict just remain stagnant or get better all by itself. Quite often it will just escalate, because then there's another reason to get upset with that person, and then there's another reason, and then another reason. So it does tend to escalate. And if you don't have a firm team culture, that, or you may have a firm team culture, but if you're not reminding people what that culture is, there's no ceiling then. There's no boundaries that those people are working within. They just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. The other terrible thing that happens with unmanaged team conflict is that you lose good employees. Have you ever noticed with working teams that are dysfunctional, it's always the bad people that stay, the instigators are the bad that stay, and the good people are the ones that leave? And then if you've got a team of bad people, then you can hire the best the world has got to offer. They'll come in and they'll want to conform with the rest of the team. That's just human nature. And so they'll conform and their standards will lower now too. You want to keep the good people. So you want to manage team conflict so you don't lose the good people on your team. The other thing that happens with unmanaged team conflict is there is a negative impact on the rest of the team. They start to feel a bit antsy, a little bit, what's going on here? It's not comfortable anymore. I can't just relax when I come to work anymore. Patients, they've got ears, they've got eyes, they can see a bad attitude, they can see when people aren't getting along well together, they can hear attitude, resentfulness in someone's voice when they're talking to somebody else, unhelpfulness, they see all of that. So you certainly don't want that. Impact on systems. When you have a group of team members that are getting along well and care about each other, they are helping each other get through the day, making sure all the systems are rolling out. If they see one person, you know, as they're taking the garbage out, drop something on the ground, they're more likely to go and pick it up. When you've got people who are resentful of each other, they start just really working for themselves and, oh, look, she dropped something on the ground, I don't care. Why would I care? Why would I help her? And so all of a sudden you've got systems that aren't being rolled out consistently or to the standard that you've set, because people are working just to save their own behind, just to get through their own day, rather than having a supportive environment where everything's getting done properly. And there's also an impact on the leadership. So as a leader, you feel like you're floundering, and it's an awful feeling when you know something's going on and you just don't know how to handle it. And you can see it getting worse, but you just don't know what to do, what your next step is supposed to do. And on top of that, the team can see that there's an obvious elephant in the room and the leadership isn't doing anything about it, sort of affects the trust they have in the leadership and the faith that they have in the leadership, that doesn't matter. You want your team to think, doesn't matter what goes on here, our leaders have got our back. Our leaders will forge the path forward. And so you don't want to compromise from that in your management of team conflict, because from the leadership position either. So what can you do in order to prevent team conflict from happening? We know it's going to happen, but what can we do to prevent it from happening? And if it does happen, to nip it in the bud. And I've listed these things here. The first one is a culture of caring. Now, Charles spoke about this at length during his live presentation. And to have part of your culture that we really, truly care for one another. We like each other. We do things for each other. We want to see each other succeed. We want to help each other succeed. We'll cheer on when you're doing the great things, and we'll help you out of a bind if you're doing something wrong. So you want to really care for each other. I want to see that person happy, productive, joyous, rather than I have zero care about what that person does in their day. So a culture of caring will carry people over. It's like the loving bond between a married couple to carry them over the bad times. If you've got a culture of caring, strong likability between people, that will carry you over some bad times. Instead of looking for reasons to hate that person, you are looking for reasons to like that person, and it shifts your gaze completely, just like our daily focus is going to encourage throughout this week and early part of next week. What can I do for you? Building that in as part of the way you all behave with one another and interact with one another through every day can absolutely help prevent team conflict, because you may not be normally the kind of person that's constantly asking other people, what can I do for you? What can I do for you? But you say it a handful of times and it just becomes part of what you do. And when you are saying, what can I do for you? You are forcing your brain to look at that person with positive eyes. Again, if you are looking at somebody through rose-colored glasses, you are less inclined to be scrutinizing the negative points if you're seeing them at all. So the what can I do for you can help. As a, as a leader, we mentioned our last weekly focus was how are you, looking at each team member in the eye whenever the opportunity presents itself and just asking, how are you going today? Are you good? And waiting for the answer. Being very open and friendly, indicating with your body language and the way you ask the question that you would like an authentic answer, a genuine answer from them. And that's where you can come across people that say, yeah, I'm good. Or, oh my God, I've started hating working here because of that bitch. She's always on my back. So that's where you can give people a space to mention a frustration straight away that you can then manage. And I'll talk about whether you manage it or not in a second. Open door management. I had the conscious awareness that when issues happened for team members or if they had a topic they wanted to bring up and discuss, they didn't have the freedom of working into my agenda, my calendar, my diary for the day and coming to me at the best possible moment when I didn't have any tasks to do. There was always tasks to do. I was always going to be busy doing something. So, and they've got precious little time. They've got to wait till there's a failed appointment time or we run early for 10 minutes and I've got 5 minutes here. So I've got 5 minutes literally to talk about this one issue. So unless my rule was that unless I'm actively speaking with a patient, I am open to you. I will drop whatever task I'm doing and I am here for you. And people would come in and sit down and just tell me what's going on for them. So what I found was that was nipping things in the bud. And what can often happen is they'll say, oh, this person's just not doing, rolling out this system properly. And it's frustrating me. Like I'm always doing this dairy, constantly doing this dairy. I'm like, oh, that is frustrating. And then I'd always ask the question, do you want me to do something about that? 90% of the time they said no. 90% of the time they said, no, I'll figure it out. That's okay. But I just wanted to talk to you about it. I said, thank you. I'm so pleased you told me about that. Because then, of course, as a manager, when you're talking to that other person, you can be quite cryptic in the way you bring up something like that and say, you know what, one of the things I really love seeing in this team is when I just see everyone helping each other out. Like, you know, I was seeing blah, blah, help you with your stereo the other day. I really like seeing that. And when you're saying things like that, you're not pinpointing saying you're doing the wrong thing. What you're saying is, I notice great behaviour. And then naturally, most people want to move towards that pleasure of having someone acknowledge them for a good thing that they've done. And so then hopefully next time they're in their stereo going, oh, might as well do her tray as well. That will get me in the good books. The boss will be happy with that. So open door management is very effective and it doesn't mean they're going to be presenting and dumping a whole bunch of problems on your plate. Sometimes it is just them getting it out of their mouth, which is what you want. And so that leads into the next one, which is venting. Allow people to vent. Make sure that your team members are told by you that you are able to go blur about something. I won't judge it and I'm not going to do anything about it because I know the importance of you getting it out of your mouth. So when someone comes in and complains about something, that's not necessarily the time to say, oh, no, it's not our culture to talk badly about that person. No, you don't want them to hold on to all these upsets. You want them to have the ability just to let off a bit of steam about it because then everything calms down again. Just like a tea kettle, let it calm down again. So let them vent, say, do you want me to do anything about this? Or you're just having a vent. I'm just having a vent, groovy, go nuts, go to town, vent away. It's gonna be only for 5 minutes. I'm not going to take a side and I'm not going to have an opinion about what you're saying. I'm just going to listen intently and acknowledge your space. That's all. And then I will never go off and tell anybody else about that vent. It must be private and contained. You can't then have that be the cause of gossip happening. The morning huddle is another situation where you can nip things in the bud. If one of your questions in the morning huddle is, what happened yesterday that we could improve upon today? Again, morning huddles are great because they're only 10 to 15 minutes. You've got limited time. So it stops that editorializing, that making a situation bigger than it needs to be. You're just stating the fact, having it heard, great, we'll move forward today without, you know, trying to everyone doing their own stereo, fantastic. There's another blog that I put out, which I will attach to this card, and it talked about, I can't remember what the sentence was, a friend of mine said this is what they do in their real estate office, but they come together in their morning huddle, their version of a morning huddle, and one of the questions is they go around to each member and it's basically, how are you feeling today? How are you feeling today? And then that's when people can say, I'm feeling like I was picked on a bit yesterday, bullied a little bit, and I want it to change today. And again, it's all designed to be very quick and snappy and simple. So I'm going to attach that because that could be something that could be useful in your team if you are trying to shift and change the culture and you're checking in with everyone with how they're feeling about that. So I'll put that attach that to the card. So these are areas that you can incorporate into your management style and your team culture to prevent team conflict from even happening in the first place. That everything, if it does raise up a little thing, it's nipped in the bud and everything calms down again. If things do get to the degree that I allowed them to get to in my practice and we've got fisticuffs in the surgery, well, let's have a look at what the resolution is going to be. And this is what I spoke about with the management of Joe and Joe. So one-on-one, tell me what's going on. I'll adjust that. I did it too quickly. I didn't proofread it. Tell me what's going on, what's been going on for you. Tell me what's been going on for you, one-on-one. Then listen, pass no judgment, no need for solution. Do not think that just because a person presents a problem in your lap regarding anything, that as a leader, you are expected to have a solution straight away. I discovered early on that one, I could never think of a solution in the heat of the moment quite often. And two, the solution I developed after going for a half hour walk and contemplating all elements that go into it, that situation, was always far better than anything I could have imagined over a 10 minute period of thinking. So allow yourself the beautiful luxury of having a problem just roll around in your noggin for a day or two, go for a walk, go for a drive, go for a run, and just let your thoughts pass in and out of this problem, thinking about it from your perspective, their perspective, the business perspective, and you'll be amazed at what solutions do rise to the surface, and you'll be much happier with that solution than anyone that you came up with really quickly. And do not take sides. Just to go back onto no need for solution, keep in mind with the Joe and Joe situation, I didn't provide a solution to them and their conflict. And quite often you may hear the term, the thing is never the thing. So I think they use that term a lot with things like addiction. So someone who's overeating, it's not overeating that's the problem. It's the feelings that you're having that makes you feel comfort from overeating. So the thing, it's not the overeating that's the problem. You can fix that problem, lickety split. Stop overeating, just stop it. Eat smaller meals. Problem solved. But they can't do that because that's not the thing to fix. The thing to fix is how they feel about themselves or the way they feel about their situation or whatever. So the thing is never the thing. In the Joe and Joe situation, whatever caused their tussle, whatever the hell it was that caused that tussle in the surgery, that wasn't the thing. So trying to fix that thing would have been fruitless and would not have been successful because that wasn't the thing. Then once you've had given them the space and the generosity of spirit from you to just let them share without your interruption or anything like that, let them share. Then as a business owner, as a manager of your team, you describe the behavior that is to be expected from them and be specific. The more specific you can be, the better the instruction to them, the better they understand this is what I need to do now. Not good enough to say you've got to be nice to each other. What does nice look like to you? Describe that. I need you to look each other in the eye in the morning and smile. Don't worry. You don't have to worry about your ego being, I've given up and I've just allowed myself to like this person. No, I get it. I get that you don't like them. And I know that you'll be faking it. I can see that. That's okay. Your ego is safe. So describe the behavior expected. let them know it's okay to fake it. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with faking it. Reward feedback. So the minute you see them do the wonderful stuff, reward them. The minute you see them slip, go up, say, just to remind you, this is what I'm expecting. And then check in. When someone's moving through a conflict, they need to feel protected. They need to feel safe. Otherwise, you're going to have insecurities and defensiveness rise to the surface again. No, you want everything, that part of it to calm down. For that to calm down, they need to feel protected, you know. So go to them and say, how's everything going? Are you going okay with it all? I can see the efforts that you're going to. Really loving it. Thanks so much. So during the session last night that I did that I didn't record, the question came up of two people are functioning beautifully as performers. They just clash for some reason. They just clash. And so nobody wants anyone to leave. Everyone wants the team to stay nice and tight. I think it's, I told you about the schoolyard example, it's wildly probable that these two people can get along well. And what's required for that to happen? And I heard a quote yesterday, and then I raised it with Charles last night, about when one person shows vulnerability, the other person's natural default response is to show empathy. And the minute you think about it, the minute you're feeling empathy towards another person, you're starting to like them. You're starting to relate to their world and you're starting to understand them. And so I chatted with Charles a bit about this last night, and this is where you could get, it's not, the conflict isn't to the point where they're doing, you know, the conflict's to the point where it's just affecting their happiness during the day and the way they're interacting with each other through the day. So sitting them down and having not one-on-ones, but having being a facilitator of a discussion between them may be highly useful, where you sit down with them and you say to them, what do you need from this person to move forward happily? How does this situation between the two of you, how does it affect you? How does it make you feel? When you start talking about feelings, I think that is bringing vulnerability to the table. And when the vulnerability comes to the table, you then get the empathy from the other side, and that's reversed when they switch speaking times, you know, when the other person's talking about their vulnerability, how the situation makes them feel and how they want to end up feeling with each other. And that sort of questioning can also bring to the awareness of people of their own faulty thinking, in a sense. When we're in conflict, many of us don't learn how to manage conflict well. And so when we're functioning from a space of fear, insecurity, defensiveness, we really are reacting like a child. Where that's, you know, we're going back to kindergarten days where we just want things done our way. And so to help people verbalize what's going on for them can help them see things through their adult eyes and going, oh gosh, it's kind of silly that I'm upset about these things because, and it's kind of silly how my expectations are so wild. For example, if someone spoke badly about you back in high school, you may still dislike them now, even though it's been 20, 30 years down the track. Yet if I said to you at the time, that person's spoken badly about you, how do you feel? You say, I don't like them, I'm not going to speak to them again. If I then said, and what sentence are you going to impose upon them? How long would you need to not speak to them to make that then equal in your brain? Rarely would it be forever. They will never be spoken to again. That would then even us out. Usually it's like, oh, I won't speak to them for a year. That'll serve it. They'll serve that sentence and then everything will be right again. But if you get two people who are naturally in opposition to each other, talking about how it makes them feel, talking about how they want to end up feeling while working with that other person, and therefore what they need from that other person in order to have that, it can help them identify realistic expectations rather than non-realistic expectations, and help them identify how often it is that we just want to control somebody else's space and how we just want people to do things our way. And so it can bring those sort of discussions out, and it leads to greater understanding. So I think the vulnerability empathy thing is a strong lesson, a strong insight to take forward. So I hope that was all helpful for you. The other thing I've just attached there is the JPPS behavior policy. This is something I wrote years ago. It may be helpful for you in your development of team culture as well. One of the things that I've added in there is just whenever there is an issue, always to move through. If you're about to, if you're saying, okay, there's an issue here and we're going to manage it, think first, is this an actual issue that's affecting systems and patient care? Or is it just something that I want done my way? So it's got an element there to try to dissuade micromanagement, dissuade trying to just control how other people act and behave in accordance to Julie's rule book, which I learned long ago, nobody wants to live by Julie's rule book. So that's there for you as well. As I say, I'll attach that blog there and I will put out on my email list, hopefully you're part of the email list, but also on the Facebook page, the club group page, the other blog I was talking about, in support of our weekly focus of how can you surrender attachment to and therefore improve the, that team member's performance in your eyes. We've done team conflict. We will drag that over to the completed section. I will add the recording once it is ready in just a few moments. Our next live session is coming up on Sunday afternoon and our focus is team engagement. Sorry, patient engagement in their treatment. I'm focused on teams. Just looking at the other bits and pieces that I've got there as well. Quick and short two-liners to increase treatment acceptance. Lovely. These are inputs from other members, and so I love it. Staff role in patient engagement, excellent. And follow-up strategy for treatment not accepted. Oh, it's going to be a very full and beautiful session on Sunday. Keep adding bits and pieces to that. Thank you for those who already have added bits and pieces to that. Have a wonderful rest of your day. If you have any questions about what we've discussed today and if you'd like any support with your particular scenarios, contact me anytime. We can speak over the phone, we can do an online session together, we can speak via email, whatever is easy for you guys. But I wish you have a fantastic day and I look forward to seeing you all on Sunday. See you later.